Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Joe Donahue. We'll be discussing birds today on the program. Rich Guthrie is here to help answer your questions about them. And Nancy Casello is here as well from Wild Birds Unlimited. And it's a great pleasure to have you aboard. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Joe.
The number to call us, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. Check in on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Roundtable. Tweet us at WAMC VoxPop or email voxpop@wamc.org. So there's absolutely no excuse for you not becoming a part of the program and participating in today's proceedings. We welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And we're doing a sound check, so
hello,
make sure
hello,
that Rich can
everybody.
Actually hear himself, and you all can hear yourselves, and that's all important. You should all be able to hear yourselves now.
Thank
hello.
You, Joe.
Hello,
okay.
Nope.
All right. You may want to check another pair of headphones there, Nancy, and you should be all set. Excellent.
Okay.
All right. Excellent. We have done the business portion of the program, and now it's time for your phone calls and to talk about what is going on in nature outside. And, you know, it started off a little rough, but it's ended up being kind of a nice summer, hasn't it?
It's summer. Where was that?
Well, true, but you know.
You know, we're feeling autumn in the air, and so are the birds.
So what does that mean? How has that impacted our sightings?
Well, they're heading south. You'll notice that there's flocks of birds gathering up. They're queuing up out there. They're getting ready on the phone wires in their southbound trek to Mexico, Florida, South America, New Jersey. They're on their way.
So they're ready to go, and this is how much earlier than quote-unquote normal, if there is such a thing?
They're right on schedule.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They're right on schedule. This happens, the first foot out the door usually is around the 4th of July, when the early birds that have finished their nesting chores, the young are out on their own, and mom and pop pack their bags and head south. That's not 100% the case with our local birds. Some of them are still nesting. Some of them are raising another brood and may be doing so right into September. But the vast majority are finished and ready to leave.
Would they be the ones that are a little more, hardy?
No, just the ones whose species inclinations direct them there. In other words, the swallows, for example, as a group, we have half a dozen different species of swallows. Some of them leave before the other species. Some of them will be around right into and through the winter. The tree swallows, for example, spend the winter here. Well, down on Long Island or New Jersey, whereas the barn swallows go clear to South America.
And Nancy?
And the birds that are staying around, Richard mentioned that there's still some that are nesting. I'll be on the lookout for American goldfinches. They're amongst the latest of our nesting birds that you'll find in your own backyard. So they'll be nesting soon. And I was telling Rich earlier that earlier this week, I had our black-capped chickadees leave their nest. We had a very successful nesting year in our yard. In fact, they were the 21st through 26th black-capped chickadees that fledged from boxes in our yard. So we had a very active and successful chickadee nesting year. So
we welcome your phone calls on Vox Pop, of course, and the lines will be loaded in just a matter of moments. So now's a fine time to get in to talk to Nancy and Rich. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551, and we'll get to your calls in just a moment. So for you, has there been a big sighting this summer?
Can I brag a bit?
Of course.
Hey, thank you.
Go ahead. Be my guest.
Thank you very much, Joe. I'm ready to go. Just last evening, afternoon, I had a call from my son. He's also an avid birder. He picked up and found yet another new bird for New York State, which is something he's been on a run with lately. This one happens to be what we call a neotropical cormorant. And as the name suggests, it's a bird from the Neotropics that has not yet been seen ever in New York State, at least hasn't been recorded and documented in New York.
Did he see it in our listening area?
He did not. It was out on Lake Ontario at Hamlin Beach State Park, which is near where he lives. But he got some photographs of it so that the verification through the appropriate sources should be a matter of course. And as a result, you know, I'm ready, geared up and ready to go in case this thing, it flew right by, kept on going. And if the thing should settle down and be relocated, I'm on my way.
Nancy, anything to brag about?
Well, Richard also mentioned migration. There's migration going on, not only on the lakes and with shorebirds, but also right in our own backyards. Earlier this week, I had a eastern towhee. Hadn't seen a towhee in my yard since 2010, so it was a juvenile and different plumage than a typical eastern towhee. So that was a nice one coming through. And the start of warbler migration, I had a black-throated green warbler come through. So, like Rich said, it's starting.
Absolutely.
And the towhee is a type of sparrow. It's a big, chunky sparrow that bigger than the rest of his clan, but they are a distinctive group in the sparrow family. They have a wonderful song. It sounds like they're saying, drink your tea.
Do it for us.
Drink your tea.
Oh, okay.
I'll verbalize it.
I didn't know it was
a... And I can't whistle. It goes something like... And what we do is put a little word to it so you can associate a similar sound to... And remember it. It's a memory of mnemonic.
Drink your tea, for goodness sakes.
Drink your tea.
Let's go to the phones, and we welcome your calls, 1-800-348-2551. It is Vox Pop. We are talking to two bird experts, of course, and we welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551. We begin with John in the Helderbergs. John, good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my call.
A delight to have you here.
I've got a couple of things. Well, number one, I've got a flock of bluebirds.
Oh, good.
Around my barn.
Yes.
Yep. But I also have a sumac around there. They usually hang around and eat them. And then I've got a bird. It kind of sounds like what you just mentioned, was just previously mentioned.
The towhee?
The fat swallow?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, go ahead.
It took over my barn swallowness in my barn.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't look like anything I'd ever seen before. It wasn't a barn swallow.
No, it wasn't a towhee either. Towhees nest in shrubbery, low to the ground, at or below eye level, and not inside an enclosure. So we're dealing with something else. Perhaps another bird that will like to nest inside a barn or at the edge of a barn would be a phoebe, which is a type of flycatcher, has a whole different demeanor than that of the swallows. Or it could be one of the other swallow species. But inside a barn, there's very few birds that will actually go in a barn and nest inside a building.
Well, I had swallow nests in the barn.
Right.
And I didn't tear them down, you know, let them have fun.
Let them have fun and eat the mosquitoes. Right. Go for it.
So, John, we have a lot of other people on the phone, but I know you had a woodpecker question as well.
Yeah. Well, have you ever seen two woodpeckers, big pileated woodpeckers, together?
On occasion, and you're right about that. Your suspicion is right on. They are usually solitary working birds, but it could be a bonded pair that will, part of their courtship, work together, or it could be a parent and young, mom and pop taking care of the kids, and they'll work together to teach the kids the ropes, and then off they go. They're booted out of the nest.
And the timing's still right. We have a lot of customers that are still talking about seeing those the families of woodpeckers together. So,
boy, I saw one fly by the car. God, those things are huge. I
mean, oh, they are.
Big, massive, beautiful birds.
And you know what? The nice thing about them, to me anyway, is that they're becoming more accustomed to people.
Yeah.
Over the course of time. They used to be very wary. And generation after generation, over the course of decades, they seem to have moved in and made themselves comfortable more closely to human habitation than in the past.
John, thank you very much for the telephone call. That frees up a line for you. The lines are loaded. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-34-TALK-1. Let us go to Lynn in Massachusetts. Lynn, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. So congratulations on your baby chickadees, too.
thank you.
That's fabulous. I just got really into feeding the birds this year, all year round anyway, and I saw so many little babies come. My first question is about the bird count.
Yes.
And what can you tell me about? I mean, I hate going on the internet. I just hate it. Can you tell me more about that a little bit?
Well, I assume you're talking about the Audubon Society's annual Christmas bird count.
Yes.
Yep. Well, that's
so do you want to know results or how to participate?
Well, I want to know what they're asking, and yes.
Okay. Just a little background.
I gave you two choices, and yeah. You took both of them, just for the
well,
record.
Well, that's good. We'll go after both
okay,
of them.
Okay, all right.
The Christmas bird count, and it's not too soon to start planning your activities there, began well over 100 years ago by the Audubon Society. It's been going on for years since, and there's thousands and tens of thousands of people that participate each year throughout the United States and Canada, and now expanding into Central and South America and beyond. What they are doing now, you could go to audubon.org to latch on to their database, and you can find out what birds have been counted going all the way back to the year 1900. You can look back at last year and see who in the Massachusetts area or who in Albany, New York, or Schenectady, New York, or New York City, New York, find out who was counting what and how many and when. So there's really a bucket load of information out there, all internet online now.
So if there's nobody in my area counting, or does it matter?
Where are you in Massachusetts?
My input count, Western.
Western Mass. There are people out there. You have the folks in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, Berkshire County, Massachusetts, and other similar places. Go on Audubon and look there, and you'll find they have a radio button to find a count near you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Can I ask another one?
You do. We just have to go to a break, so make it very quick.
Okay. Is it rare to see the red-breasted grosbeaks around here, or rose-breasted grosbeaks?
Rose-breasted grosbeaks, not in the summertime. They're fairly common. They're hard to see, but they're fairly common. They just like to be in the deep woods.
Yeah, so that's okay. And I got one. I got a buff-colored bird that I'm not going to be able to ask you about. I've been looking in every book I have, and I can't find it.
Well, I'll give you some contact information later, and then you could send me a picture or a description, and we'll work on it, okay?
And we'll figure it out. Lynn, thank you very much for the telephone call. We're going to take a quick break. We welcome you in on the program, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. Birds today on Vox Pop. We'll be back with Rich and Nancy after this short break.
Support comes from the 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York, newly renovated boutique hotel in the heart of the Hudson Valley. 12 guest rooms with modern amenities located close to historic landmarks. The1850house.com. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Women owned and operated with a combined 70 years experience, eye exams by appointment. 518-459-2638. Bethel Woods Center for the Arts presenting cellist Yo-Yo Ma, Stuart Duncan, Edgar Myers, and Chris Thiele in the Goat Rodeo Sessions with guest vocalist Eva O'Donovan. Friday, August 16th at 8 p.m., bethelwoodscenter.org. And Glens Falls Hospital, serving 6 counties in the Southern Adirondacks in 28 locations, Big City Medicine, Hometown Care. Twitter, Facebook, and glensfallshospital.org.
Welcome back to the Vox Pop program this afternoon. Our subject is birding, and our guest, Rich Guthrie, our dear friend, veteran birder and former NCON specialist Rich Guthrie. And Nancy So is with us as well from Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs, beautiful store in Saratoga Springs, right off Route 50.
Yes.
And right across from the Wilton Mall, or whatever they're calling it these days. And you've got all kinds of cool events coming up this weekend. You're celebrating.
We sure
have reason to celebrate.
10 years.
Good for you.
10 years. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we have a big 3-day weekend planned with some main events. We're having the owner of Birds and Beans Coffee. They are a bird-friendly, shade-grown coffee. He's going to be with us hosting a bird-friendly coffee hour to start off with on Friday. We have a Eurasian eagle owl and another rescued raptor that's going to be in the store on Friday from 4 to 7 p.m., courtesy of Silent Wings Raptor Rehab and Education. And one of our biggest main events is Don and Lillian Stokes are going to be in the store on Saturday from 1 to 5.
Two of my favorite bird people.
Yep, they've been around for years and years, and they're going to be signing copies of their guides. They've recently split their North American guide into two smaller field guides, the Stokes Field Guide to Birds of the Eastern Region, and they're going to be signing those books on Saturday from 1 to 5. So
one of the staples of the fun drives when we give away the Stokes Field Guide, and we thank you for that, and, of course, Stokes for all they do. And I love the guy, too, because it's the birds are alive.
And he does the two of them. They're such great writers and photographers, and they contribute a great resource to the community.
Yeah, the thing that I love about this is lots of pictures.
Yeah,
it's not just one snapshot of a bird in one position.
No, in flight or on a post, and you get a real idea, and it helps in identification a great deal.
Yes, one of those books I keep with me in the car.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you need a couple copies. You need one thing.
Well,
I do.
You can never have too many field guides.
Absolutely. Let's go to the phones. We welcome your call as well. 1-800-348-2551. Roxanne is in Schenectady. We've been waiting for you, Roxanne.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's unusual to hear you on Vox Pop, Joe.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm filling in for Ray Graff, and it's a great pleasure.
Nice to have you. Here's an unusual question. A few years ago, I used to feed the birds, I had so many birds flying around. It was wild out there. But then I found that it was attracting, like, some homeless cats into my yard, hunting the birds, you know, from my garden and everything, so I discontinued it. Well, anyway, I started feeding the birds again this summer, but rather than go back to the seeds, which I know is probably, you know, far preferable, I live near a bread outlet store, so they, you know, have this thing where you can buy huge quantities of semi-squashed bread. And so I've been feeding, just originally started with the sparrows, whole wheat bread. And they absolutely love it. Now the starlings and the grackles are moving in. And but my question is, sometimes I wonder, like, how good this bread is, even though it tends to be the grainier, you know, wheat breads. And then I'm worried that, you know, maybe I'm creating an obesity problem.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry
about
it.
Okay, because they eat so much, I'm throwing it out the window all the time.
You don't have to worry about that with the birds. They have such a high metabolism rate that they're going to they need all the energy they can get.
All that flying
and hopping around and watching out for hawks and stray cats.
Yeah,
all this stuff they need to keep them going. Bread does provide a beneficial food source for the birds. It's not one of those things that we really need to worry about. I'd be more worried about the cats than the birds and than the bread.
Yeah, so far I haven't seen any cats.
Well, good for you. And don't forget, you can put a hummingbird feeder out there, and they're always such a delight to have in your backyard. It's a very simple process, and sugar water,
just
no
sugar
color.
Water.
Yeah, and the appropriate feeder, you know, dispenser. They come flying up, and I don't know if you'll get any this year. It may be a little late to get started on them, but once they find you, they'll love you.
It
Yeah. You know, I read something once about hummingbirds that they're not actually multicolored, that it's that iridescence is only the way the light is refracting on their wings.
Yes, on certain feather configurations, that is a matter of refracted light. But other ones do have genuine color.
That's fascinating.
Yes,
well,
it is.
I was worried because some of these sparrows are looking pretty big, let me tell you.
I will provide a little counterpoint on that, though, is that, you know, the bread, as far as the nutritional value that it provides, is not as good as if you were putting out some type of seeds that are higher
right.
in protein or higher in fats. And at this time of year, the molt is starting. The molting process requires a lot of protein in order to replace those mm-hmm. feathers and grow new feathers. So the nutritional
yeah.
value of the bread isn't as good as
no,
if you were putting seed out.
And then yeah. you could add some suet to that mix and give them
oh,
a more
God.
Balanced diet.
I don't think I can make the same commitment that you guys do.
Well, suet's easy enough to do. They have these little cakes that
get
come
a
in.
Cake, put it in the cage.
Exactly.
And lock her up and go to town.
And let them go. Yeah, they'll take care of the rest.
Well, you know, I've got the rabbits are eating the bread and the squirrels and everything. It's like a wildlife preserve out there.
Well, what's wrong with that? That sounds great.
Nothing. I love it, but
yeah,
I worry, like, maybe I'm altering nature in some major
no,
way.
No, don't
here.
You worry. They'll
okay.
go out and supplement their food supply with
you.
Other natural sources.
I don't have to
sources.
Worry about that anyway.
Atta
well,
girl.
Well,
there's other things to
guys.
Worry about. Roxanne, thank you very much. I appreciate
care,
your telephone
Joe.
Call. Thank you.
Bye.
Let's go to Facebook, and a reminder that you can join us on Facebook as well. Check in at Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Roundtable. Also, you can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org, or, of course, call us at 1-800-348-2551. Christopher checked in from Bethlehem and says, I have 50 tube arborvitaes surrounding my property. And during the spring, it's their home where they give birds. When the parents clean out the nest, they put all the droppings in the pool. How do I prevent them from doing that? I love the birds, but the amount of droppings leaves the pool dirty and the pool deck disgusting.
Well, actually, that's an uphill battle, and I don't think it's one that you can actually win, other than to cover the pool. Because what it is, it's a wonderful story if it weren't for the pool and the deck.
Everything was fine until
you
built the pool.
Until they found your pool. And they do this for a good reason. The parent birds, in order to keep the nest hygienically stable, will carry nature's disposable diaper away from the nest.
Right.
And they'll look for a place of water someplace far away so they can drop it without a trail back to the nest.
Right.
So they're protecting the babies by doing that. So they're looking for a pond, or in some cases, a driveway that looks like a stream because it's black and it looks like water, and they're in a hurry to get rid of it.
Right.
So that's their story.
Well, so what do you, yeah, that makes sense.
That's you're right. It ain't pleasant, but that's nature
for you.
That's
what they have to do. Christopher, I hope that helps in some way, shape, or form.
Probably not, Christopher. Probably not what you wanted to hear. But good, and thank you for caring for the birds with the arborvitaes.
Let's go to Doris now in Cherry Valley. Good morning, or good afternoon. I'm sorry. I'm so used to doing a morning
yeah,
show.
Yeah, right.
I apologize.
Good morning, Joe.
Good afternoon, Doris. How are you?
It was a pretty nice morning also.
Yes, absolutely.
I was curious whether anyone else has noticed when the cardinals are mating. Now, these two have been around for a long time, but I have seen them mating as if they just met each other, and one will pick up a sunflower seed and feed it to the other, and whichever one is being fed acts like a fledgling, like a baby.
That's right. Well, she's training
romantic.
Him. She's training him. That's
training him to do what?
To feed the babies. Take care of the kids.
Bring gifts.
Depends on your definition of gifts, I guess. Go ahead.
Well, a sunflower seed to a cardinal.
Yeah,
that's a wonderful
absolutely.
Thing. But
well, I've seen them doing it fairly late in the summer, and I assume that means they're trying to start another brood.
I think
and by
you're
doing
right.
it, you mean the seeding.
Yes.
Okay.
The little gift giving. Yes.
Just wanted to clarify.
Yeah. And you'll see that with cardinals and house finches and several of the other birds. And the female will act like a fledgling with that little fluttery wing motion, just as the baby birds would do if they were in a nest. And as Nancy says, it's part of the pair bonding ritual that they go through. Bringing gifts is part of the nature. And also giving him a little heads up on what to expect in another few weeks.
Doris, thank you very much for the telephone call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go now to Anne in Albany. Hello, Anne.
Hello. My question is really about the bird feeder location. I had a bird feeder in my yard, and it was a little too close to our hemlocks, and the squirrels were jumping all over it.
Right.
So I moved it closer to the house, and it's kind of in the middle of the yard now. Well, what happened was all the lovely little birds, the little songbirds, the chickadees, the cardinals, came once or twice, and then a whole bunch of sparrows came for the next 2 months and chased them all away. So my question is that bird feeder in a bad location? The little beautiful birds, I call them, would they be happier closer to the trees? Or how do I protect them from the sparrows that are gluttonous and aggressive?
The smaller birds, well, all the birds, when your bird feeder is just like right out in the open, mm-hmm. you do want to have it close enough that should a hawk or some other type of predator come to the area, that they have some place to get away real quick to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just make sure that they're within, you know, like 12, 15 feet of some type of shelter so that if they feel threatened that they're able to take off real quickly. I think maybe some of your changes this year could have been just that the chickadees got busy with the nesting activities, started relying upon your feeder just a little bit less, because when they have young in the nest, they are feeding those young caterpillars, 100% caterpillars, no seeds. Oh. So you might have just seen just a natural process taking place there with the chickadees at the feet, utilizing the feeders just a little bit less during the summer,
mm-hmm.
and leaving room for those sparrows to move in.
Well, they sure did move in. I mean, in dozens of them, and they swooped down on the other birds and just kind of flapped their wings at them and chased them away.
Well, the other birds will just will learn to cope, or you can offer a different kind of birding station for the other birds, such as, again, a hummingbird feeder or the suet feeder that the sparrows are not likely to go to.
Oh.
A different variety of food that will attract the sparrows away from what food you have. Cracked corn works well.
Okay. I think I have cracked corn with some sunflower seeds in there.
Okay. And probably if there's a lot of millet in it, which are the small white round seeds, that's a favorite of the sparrows too. So the feeders that you don't necessarily want the sparrows at, put mm-hmm. that seed someplace else.
Okay. All right. Well, that solves the problem. I'll let you know how it works.
Well,
please,
thank you very much.
Yes. We appreciate it. Let us know. Give us a progress report along the way. We'd appreciate that. Let's go over to Maria now in Olive Bridge. And one more call before we have to go over for a break. Maria, good afternoon. How are
you?
Hi. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
We have a porch that has very rustic railings and transoms. They have cedar, and they're curved, and they've got bark on them, which I think may be significant in your answer. And a robin has made a nest in this perfect place. It's really the branches come together, and it makes a nice base for the nest. And last year, she had four fledglings, and we watched them all grow up from inside the house, which was, you know, wonderful. You could see them right there. And they all grew up, and they, you know, came out of the nest, and we watched them go one by one into the woods after the parents, and it had a happy ending. And then this year, she made a nest earlier, the first nest, and the first of the season. And we watched them grow up, and everything seemed fine. And then I went off to a conference, and the day that I left, they were gone. The person who was here told me that they were gone, and I assumed that they fledged as well because it was time. But this year, the second nest, I noticed that the babies were scratching a lot and the mother a little bit too. And a neighbor, just a couple of days before this, what I'm going to tell you, happened, warned me that the mother robin has mites, and when it comes to the nest, makes the nest the first time, it's not too much of a problem. She can keep on top of it. But the second time around, the babies get completely infested, and sometimes they itch so much that they jump out of the nest prematurely, and they die. And like 2 days after he told me that, I found one dead on the porch. Mm. And then there were three left. There had been four altogether. And then, I don't know, within a few days of that, there were only two left. And then I think right after that, I found one of those two dead and the other one missing, the last one missing. But a couple of days after that, it does have a tiny bit of a happy ending. I did see the one that was missing sitting on a board, and I could see it was the baby because it had a stubby tail, and sure enough, Mom came along, or Dad, and gave it some food. So one of them out of the four made it. And then, to continue just the story, I wound up with two weird bumps that I thought were bites of some kind, but they were like no bites I'd ever had before. And I did look it up, and they said that mites are species-specific, which I kind of knew before, and that they might bite you and it'll itch and it'll go away. But these are nasty bites.
Okay, so I'm going to I have to move you here because we have a break. But so your specific question is what?
Well, the question is, what do I do to help them? I believe that I should probably take the nest down. The remains of it is kind of disheveled. I think I should take it all away.
Well, there are products out there that you can use to eliminate the mites from the nest site. I know that for bluebird nest sites, they do recommend putting a dusting powder in there that will be that is not harmful to the birds, but is a I think it's a rotenone type formulation that will get rid of the mites and be the benefit to the birds. Again, it's not harmful to the birds.
No, taking the nest away won't help.
Well, that you could do that. The birds are pretty well done with their nesting cycle, so you can do that by all means. Next year, if it becomes
common?
A problem. Pardon?
Is this common?
Unfortunately, it is. In some birds, it is. And I don't think it was a bite that you got on your arm either. I think that might be some other creature that you found while walking around. So,
could be.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Marie, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it. We're going to be back with our birding Vox Pop in just a moment. In the meantime, you can join in on the fun. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. You can also check in on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Roundtable. Tweet us, and what better thing to do on a bird Vox Pop? Tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll continue with Nancy and Rich after this short break.
Support comes from Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Evening classes starting in September for the Horticulture Certificate Program with courses in horticulture and gardening design. Open to all experience levels, berkshirebotanical.org. Dr. Joseph Cohen, optometrist, eye examination, classic eyewear, contact lens fitting in historic Uptown Kingston. Participating with MVP, Empire, Davis, VSP, Medicare, and other insurances. CohenOptometry.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. And Washington County Tourism, announcing the Washington County Fair, August 19th through the 25th, spotlighting the county's agricultural heritage with exhibits, farm museum, and more. WashingtonNYCounty.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. Birding is the topic of the day, and Rich Guthrie is here, our dear friend Rich Guthrie, who has been doing this program as long as I can remember.
Yes, quite a while now, Joe.
That's right. Almost 20 years, I believe.
At least 20 years and 20 fun years. Wow.
Absolutely. Always a joy to have Rich here. And Nancy Casello is here as well. And Nancy is from Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs in Wilton, right off Route 50. They have a wonderful location, celebrating their 10th anniversary, and she'll tell you a little bit more about some of the events that they have coming up and some other cool things that you can celebrate too.
Yay.
Why not?
That's right.
We need to celebrate good stuff. Let's go back to the phones, get to as many people as we can in our remaining 15 minutes or so of the program. We go to Tom in Kingston. Tom, tell us about the Tale of the Crow.
Yes, the Tale of the Crow. So this is what I heard. A short anecdote about crows, and then I'll say my question. I heard there were some crows, and they had some sort of nuts that were encased, like black walnuts or something. I don't know what kind they were. And the story is that they couldn't get them open, and they were dropping them on the street, and thus allowing cars to run over them. But then they had trouble getting to them, so then they started doing it in the crosswalk, where they could get the nuts after the people walked by or something. And my question is, what is the deal? I've noticed lots of other really smart things about crows with their intelligence. And are they more intelligent than other birds, and are there other birds that are known for their intelligence? And I'm using this word intelligence, this human word, but whatever you want to call it.
That's fine, Tom. And you're right. Crows are smart. And you're right also in that other birds are smart. Look at the parrots and that you see that can perform wonderful tricks, let's call them. And I remember as a kid, a fella had a minor bird in a cage that would take a penny or a dime. I forget what the inflation had been to at that point. Take a dime from you and walk over, give it to the fella behind the on the other side of the cage, and walk over and pull out a fortune from a dispenser, bring it back to you and give it to you. So for 10 cents, you had a minor bird tell your fortune for you. And I thought that was quite the bargain. I don't know
remember
what the fortune was. But the bird was that smart that he was able to pick up these cues and follow this routine. There's another marvelous story about the herring gull I've seen on video in Scotland that would walk into a convenience store, walk over and pull out a bag of chips, and walk mm-hmm. out the door with this bag of chips in its beak and go over to the sidewalk and rip open a bag and help himself to potato chips or popcorn or whatever it was inside that bag. The owners were aghast. They loved it. They thought that, and the customers thought it was the cutest thing in the world. But those are just a couple of examples of how smart different kinds of birds really are. And you have to just expand that to include all the rest of them, because while we like to think some birds are smarter than others, some of them exhibit it to us better than others. But the rest of them are out there doing their own thing, their smart little tricks in their own way. So let's just say birds are pretty darn smart for being bird brains that they are.
Could you also just say a quick thing about cats taking songbirds? And if you guys have already discussed that recently, but I know a lot of people are unaware of it. In terms of cat predation on songbirds.
Well, it's one of our major losses of some of our favorite little songbirds, from the sparrows to the warblers, to the towhees, to the cardinals and the tanagers. These birds easily fall victim to cat predation, and that can easily be prevented. If you have a house cat, keep them in the house. If there are stray cats, don't encourage them to your yard. Don't feed them, there is a major movement to try to educate people. The American Birding Association is an organization that you can find online that will provide a lot of useful information about cat predation and prevention.
Great.
All right.
Tom, I hope that helps. Thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate it. We're going to go to a Facebook question from Pamela, who writes, while driving through southern Saratoga County the other day, I saw a family of turkeys with a batch of young, barely adolescent birds. I was surprised to see them that young this late in the season. Normal, or were they trying to make up for a failed earlier attempt? Will the little guys mature enough to have a good shot at surviving the winter?
The answer is yes to all of the above. It was a late brood, it's for sure, but turkeys and other bird species can do that. It could be a second brood or the result of a failed first brood.
Right.
So you're right about those accounts. They'll do fine. They'll do fine. Winter is a long way off, and by the time the first snows start to blow, I hate to think of the term, but by that time the turkeys will be well enough to be on their own. It's not too late for them to get going.
Pamela, thank you very much for checking in. A reminder, you can as well, facebook.com/WAMC Roundtable. You can also tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org or call the good old-fashioned way, 1-800-348-2551. That is what Dave did. He's in Massachusetts, and Dave has a hummingbird story for us. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi, good afternoon. I would like to share this story with you. It's something very unique, and I have never seen it before. My mom got me started birding when I was a very young kid, and we lived in the city, so later when I got married, my wife and I moved out into the country in the northeast corner of Ohio. So a friend of mine, who happens to be an American Indian, and I had taken my dog for a walk, and we were walking along the river. So we sat down on the bank, and the dog was swimming, and we kept noticing this hummingbird flying across the river from a group of trees to the bank, and then it would, you know, come back and fly back and forth. So we got curious, and we walked over to where this hummingbird was approaching the bank, and there is, on a pin oak branch that was stretched over the river, was a hummingbird nest. And we looked inside, there's two little baby hummingbirds. We could see that bills were crossed, you know, their little eye, and this was amazing because my mom told me that very few people in their lifetime ever see a hummingbird. And here we've seen many out there, and my wife feeds them all the time. And we found a nest, you know, which we thought was very exciting. So it started to rain, and we grabbed the dog, and we walked back to the house. It never stopped raining for 2 days. And when it finally did stop raining, we grabbed the camera and went back to that spot to photograph this nest. And the river had risen and washed the nest away. It was terrible. So I really don't even know if I ever got over that. But I just thought I'd let you know. I mean, how amazing is it to see an actual nest in the wild?
Well, you're right about that. And what I can tell you is that, you know, unfortunately that happens. Hummingbird will have to be a little smarter next time. Let's hope that the young were of an age where they're able to fledge in time, but I it's hard to say. Finding a hummingbird nest is a feat, that's for sure. I've only found one, and that was in Texas. I've yet to find one in New York State. But
to kind of put it in perspective, to find a hummingbird nest, first of all, you're looking for something that's the size of a walnut.
Exactly, yes.
You're looking for something that is covered on the outside with lichen and wedged into a notch of a deciduous tree that has leaves all over it, and it's tucked into a fork of a tree. So it's well camouflaged. It's very little. So yeah, you got a real treat there being able to find a hummingbird nest.
And I was told that they often build their nests over water so that predators can't get to it.
Well, that's probably very true. Next time, they'll have to build it higher. I mean, there's no way that they would know.
Yeah.
Well, no, seriously, that's how they learn. I'm assuming that the adult birds are able to pull through it. And And it happens. It happens. There were no way of knowing that the river would rise that high. So unfortunately, natural causes are one of the contributing factors in bird population stabilization. And basically, that's what it is. It's when we start dealing with the unnatural causes where the cards are stacked that much more against the wild forces.
Dave, thank you very much for sharing the story. I appreciate it. Thank you very much for checking in. I appreciate the phone call. I want to quickly correct something that I did wrong.
Yeah.
Well, I kept on saying facebook.com/WAMC roundtable.
Oh,
that's not right.
Guess what?
It's WAMC radio.
Yes.
Yeah, I said it twice.
Joe, we're with you now.
Yes. And yet people keep, they're still Facebooking,
hey,
which is good. So
they know to find
even,
you.
Even with my screw up, they still know how to get us. It's facebook.com/WAMC radio.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
All right. Now, let's go to a comment from Dawn, who says, I have a woodpecker pecking my house again this year. Last year, there was lots of damage. How can I prevent the woodpecker from pecking?
Well, that's a tough question.
A house that's not made of wood.
The house is made of wood, yeah. And woodpeckers don't like to waste their time. There may be something with the wood that may be drawing the woodpecker to it, and that ain't good.
So you mean a termite or some sort of
carpenter ants or something like that,
yeah.
If that's the case. Woodpeckers do not. Well, the other possibility is that it's found a sounding board and is using your house as a drum. Woodpeckers will do this to proclaim their territory, and you'll have to mute the sound somehow. One way would be to find out where its favorite spot is and to cover that with a burlap or some other material that will keep the bird from making the drumming sound that it loves your house to do for it.
Let's go to the phones and get in as many calls as we can in the final moments of the show. We go to Susan in Schenectady. Susan, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a really interesting question. I was at Six Mile Waterworks packing the other day.
All right.
And I heard a noise rustling on the edge, so I went over to the edge. And I saw a bird that was about the height of a crow. It looked rather sandpiper-like because it had a rather orange beak. It was bluish gray on the back, and I'm sorry I can't remember the breast, but it wasn't that distinctively different. Its legs were slightly longer than a regular ground bird, and I'm baffled and I can't find it anywhere.
Well, what I would suggest is check out green heron. I know you said bluish, but you know, we used to call them little green herons because they had very little green on them. That's just a little bird watcher's joke story there, you know.
But I saw a little green heron lot, like not much before that, and it didn't look a damn.
Wasn't it, huh? How about a kingfisher, which would be bluish on the back?
No, it wasn't a kingfisher. I saw them in another tree.
Well,
I watched the bird hop along the edge, and then it flew up into a tree, and then it flew back down to the edge. It was very skittish, but yet found. I looked up in one book, it looked like a European invasion of some kind of a bird that doesn't normally come here, but...
You don't have a picture, I bet, right?
I no, only in my brain, yeah.
Okay. Well, Joe, if it's all right, I'll give my contact information
Please
out there.
Please do.
It's
that time
like
of the show.
And I'd like you very much, Susan, to put the details down. Let me have a look at them. Maybe a bright thought. Well, one of my friends who are listening might come up and say, idiot, it's this. It's richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
Easy pickings. And Guthrie is common spelling.
Right. richardpguthrie@gmail.com. Nancy, 10th anniversary coming up.
10th anniversary. Invite everybody to come down. Get your Stokes guides that you picked up during the fun drive signed on Saturday between 1 and 5. And then a future event. We have another...
Yes.
Book signing coming up. Annette LeBlanc Kate wrote a wonderful children's book called Look Up, Birdwatching in Your Own Backyard. And she's going to be joining us coming out and signing books on September 7th from 11 to 3. This is a book that's for age 8 and up. But I'll tell you, in my reading it, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. So
I looked at it and it looks to me like a perfect starting point for a young birder to get out there.
Well, wonderful. We are out of time, but I want to thank all the people who called in. Apologize to those that we left on the line. And, of course, a big thanks to Rich and Nancy for coming today. Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure and a delight to be with you this afternoon.
Mine as usual, Joe. Thank you.
Underwriting support for Vox Pop comes from Earth Angels Veterinary Hospital, Wappingers Falls, an integrative facility that combines conventional and holistic medicine for a 360-degree approach to veterinary care. EarthAngelsVet.com. New York State Canal Corporation, featuring the journey of the replica canal schooner Lois McClure through the Erie Canal this summer. Cruise the pass, unlock the adventure, canals.ny.gov. Mario's True Value Home Center, Valencia, New York. Two locations, open 7 days a week. Building supplies, equipment rentals, hardware needs, Benmore paints and stains. True Value, start right here. Start right, start here, mariostruevalue.com. Snow Farm Williamsburg, a New England craft program offering creative arts workshops taught by master craftspeople for adults and teens, beginners and up, snowfarm.org. Thanks again for joining us for Vox Pop this afternoon. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Brandon Holmes for answering your phone calls. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Joe Donahue. Moyers & Company tomorrow. A Medical Monday next week. Dr. Nina Sachs. Stay tuned now for a news update.